and welcome to Why Golf Opinion Matters. This is the podcast where we celebrate everything about one of the greatest sports on the planet. For those of you who haven't heard about the Why Golf platform before, it's the place to go to find out why golf has such wide-ranging benefits for all of us. If you want to check out everything we have to offer, just head to thisiswhygolf.com. This episode, we're chatting to an inspiring man who's looking to open up the game of golf to a whole new audience. 3 years ago, Amin Malik set up the Muslim Golf Association with the aim of increasing the popularity of the sport among Muslim communities. Since then, he's organised hugely successful golf days and tournaments, which are often oversubscribed within just a few hours of being announced. As you might imagine, he's a pretty handy golfer too, so I'm sure we can learn a thing or two. Amin, it's so lovely that you're here with us.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Likewise, and an absolute pleasure. Really excited and looking forward to this. Thank you.
Good stuff. Now, first off, tell us, how did you get into golf?
Good question. I always wanted to, and I just never had the chance. Yeah. So come from a sporting family. So anything with a ball, I was always attracted to. Having two older brothers, and there's about 15 years difference between me and my next sibling.
Oh, wow.
Sport was always going to be a big part of it. And I was always the one that had to do the bowling or the catching or whatever it was be. But golf, I always used to see from afar, but there was never anyone in my social circle or my family that played it. And there was no way I was ever going to rock on up to a golf course, but I was just fascinated by it. Anyway, 30 odd years on, my old Sikh boss, actually he was a Sikh gentleman, says, do you fancy playing? Because we were talking about it in the office once. And I was like, absolutely. Went out, got some cheap clubs, played a couple of rounds and fell in love with the game. And then I moved to the Middle East. And then when I got back, I said to my friends, we've got to take this up. And I've not looked back since.
So did you play when you went out to the Middle East?
Not much.
No. But the passion was still there.
Absolutely. Because we had friends who were going abroad and whatnot. And in fact, back then, Saudi Arabia it was, and I was in Mecca. So I was very fortunate. So we used to drive to Jeddah, but they used to have a brownfield, right?
Yeah.
So their golf course, which is, they've got the Royal Greens now, but I saw that way before.
Oh, wow.
It was 18 holes of pure desert. Their greens were brown, so they were always sloped, mixed with oil and water, and you used to carry a piece of turf with you. So you'd go to the port cabin, and we would go in our Jeep. That was our buggy, right? The boot would be flung open. We had some clubs in the back. I mean, wherever the ball landed, you'd get a piece of turf, put the ball on it, and hit it. And there were 18 full holes, right? Where you were hitting drivers, three woods, irons, and when you were putting, it was brilliant, because not only do you see the line, the ball would leave a trail. So you could actually see the line.
So
it was brilliant.
Amazing.
So you never needed to stand behind anyone.
So your putt is behind somebody.
You could be anywhere and you could just say, I know exactly what you did. So, and then you can just move it to the right or left. But yeah, and then I think a friend of mine, we also tried to build our own simulator as well, because we were a little bit bored, as you do.
Okay. How did that go?
Interesting. Right. Interesting. We learned a lot.
Wow. How did you go about building your own simulator?
Yeah, really good question. So we bought an impact screen from America. We got that ordered in. And you've got to remember, back then Saudi Arabia didn't have postcodes. So getting things delivered from abroad was interesting. I then bought an OptiShot because it was probably the cheapest. There's no way I was going to spend thousands of pounds on a simulator. So we bought this little small device, which was working on infrareds. We got that. We then built an MDF AstroTurf, put the OptiShot in, and before you know it, hitting into screens. And we could build it indoors because the ceilings were so high.
That's really clever.
It was great for a couple of weeks, and then we realised, we're not very good.
Well, you're not very good at golf.
Good at golf, and then you start blaming the tech, right?
Totally.
But yeah.
It's not like being out on the course,
No. So the novelty soon wore off on that side of things.
Yeah. But no, I think that's brilliant, though. It shows your passion for the game.
Absolutely.
My goodness, putting a simulator together, I can't even begin. That actually gives me a headache. It makes me feel really nervous. But well done.
Thank you. What
was it about golf that clicked with you?
I think if you just look at the game itself, I always say to people that, you know, no matter how good or badly you play, you'll probably always hit one out in the middle of a club. And when you do, if you get a little sensation inside you, then I've said it's the beginning of the end. Then you can just forget about it, because you will find an addiction that will just take you over. But if you hit that ball and you hit it in the middle and it goes high and long or whatever, and you don't get a tingling feeling, then probably golf isn't for you, which is fine. And I got that feeling and it was incredible. And then the more I played, the more I just absolutely fell in love with the game. I've played a lot of sport, and there's not a single sport I can think of where you go to sleep thinking about it and you wake up thinking about it. No matter how level of football or cricket you play, or no matter how great of a day you've had, you'll always come back exhausted. There's no way you would want to go out and play at that same intensity the same day and the next day. Whereas golf, you know what it's like. You can have 17 and a half poor holes, 99 really bad shots, but it just takes one. You think, I've clocked it, right? And you think, I know exactly what I've done wrong. You forget about everything and you're fixated about coming tomorrow and just trying to put that fix into place. And it never works, but it gets you back. And And yeah, I mean, that's just the game itself, let alone the surroundings, the places, the people and everything about it. And it's changed my life. It genuinely has changed my life.
Amir, that gives me goosebumps. it's so great. I hear it again and again. And this is, you know, one of the main reasons we're doing the podcast, to just explain to people what the game of golf gives you and what it brings you. You listened to Jamie Dornan's episode, didn't you?
Yeah,
and
fabulous.
A lot of what you're saying, actually, is quite similar, because he's got such a love of the game as well.
It's incredible. I was listening to it actually on the way down here, and I was thinking, me and Jamie would probably never cross paths.
Yeah.
Right? We probably don't have a lot in common, just on the face value. But
I'd never cross paths with him ever. No.
Right. But I was listening to him, and I was thinking, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel, or how I would describe it, or how I perceive the game. And I thought, wow. And clearly there's millions of people that think like that, and it's just amazing, and it brings together, and you know, it breaks down all barriers. And it's why I say that the course never discriminates. The course doesn't care how old you are, what gender you are, what you look like. It just wants to be treated with respect, and you can go and play this game with anyone, with any age, in any generation, anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And you can't say that about many sports.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. I mean, I grew up playing junior golf in my area in Cheshire in the Northwest. And my mum, actually, she set up the Cheshire and Derbyshire League.
Oh, wow.
So there were about 70 boys and I was the only girl playing. And I was like, no, mum, I can't. I just, you know. But it put me in an environment where I became competitive in a male environment.
Yeah.
I'd always win the girls' prize, which was quite exciting. But then it encouraged a couple more girls to join.
Amazing.
And then, you know, the scene changed a little bit. Yeah. And then I got involved with Cheshire County and things progressed, but that really ignited my passion for it. But I got to meet some incredible people through
That's right.
it. I really did.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Muslim Golf Association and how that came about and how much time it's taking at the moment.
Yeah. Good question.
I know you love it though.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't change it for the world. So I got into the game late. And so what evolved when I got back from Saudi Arabia was I started playing with my friends. You know, what we progressed from a driving range to pitch and putt to municipal courses. Before you know it, we're going on golf holidays.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking I'm a golfer. And it wasn't until someone said, so what's your handicap? And back then I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe about 18. And he goes, well, if you haven't got a handicap, you're not a proper golfer. And that stung me, because I thought, if I'm going to do something, I want to do it properly.
I would consider you a golfer if you have a golf club in your hand and you're hitting a ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then I guess this is where male egos get involved, right? Yeah. Unfortunately. Anyway, so I thought, well, how do you become a proper golfer? You need a handicap. And back then you had to be a member of a golf club. And so there was always this barrier of, like I said, I don't necessarily thought I belonged in a golf club, wasn't necessarily people, I wouldn't see people like me, maybe people like me just don't become members and so on. Anyway, plucked the courage and decided to go join a local municipal course. Funny enough, I knew a few people that were there. They said, look, come along, it's all right. Joined, got a handicap.
Great.
I thought, okay, this is cool. Got 11.
And
I
11
thought,
handicap?
I got 11 handicap and I thought, they've done me over here.
Wow.
I thought, this is incredible. Because back then, they wouldn't take an average of three, they took your best three. Had one good round and two really bad. I'm like, this is not fair, right?
That's really tough.
Anyway, took it and I thought, right, okay, let's work on it.
Okay.
So 18 months now, I'm playing club golf. But it took me 18 months to actually find out that my club had teams. And actually, golf clubs have team events. And that really got to me, because I just thought, well, and then that was it. I thought, why hasn't no one sort of picked me up? Because again, I played cricket and you play competitively. And I'd be like, come on, you almost want that tap on the shoulder saying, come on, do you fancy playing? And I would have given up everything.
Mm.
No one ever did. And then I started realizing, actually, there's a really ugly side to golf, and that there's a really big drinking culture. There's a really big drinking and social culture. Now, as a Muslim, I don't drink. So when I used to finish my round, you'd hand in your card. The most I'd ever do is have a quick glass of Coke and then I'd leave, right? Because it just wasn't my scene. And so I realised that actually, if I'm not mixing with people, you don't get to know who's who. You don't get to know the committees. Very rarely did people come up and say they wanted to play with you. You'd almost have to put your name down. And I thought, okay, wow, there's a whole life, club life here I'm not privy to. That's not cool.
Yeah.
The other point was, is then there was a very big gambling culture. I then got introduced to this concept of swindle, right? So you turn up on a Sunday morning, getting involved in swindle, thought, great, balls in the hat, let's go play. And it's like, yeah, cool, £5 entry, £2 for the twos or whatever it was. And I was like, gents, I don't, you know, that's not my thing. I don't gamble, right? And then you get looked at funny, like, what's wrong with you? Can you not, are you tight? And I'm like, it's really not a money thing. It's a principle thing. It's my morals. I don't believe in the game. I just want to come out. I just want to beat you, right? I don't need to have money to be motivated by it. I just want to play the game to the best that I can. And you realize that all of a sudden, people don't want to play with you, or you're just like, okay, well, let's not necessarily worry about him. And I thought, that's not right. And then thirdly, as a Muslim, we pray five times a day. Now, and because it follows the sun, you've got longer days in the summer, shorter days in the winter. And so in the winter, you could have two, maybe even four prayers that would take place between 12 in the afternoon and 4 o'clock in the evening because of the sunset, right? And so when you're playing, it only takes a couple of minutes to step aside and perform a prayer. And when we've done that, we've had racist comments thrown at us, we've made to feel uncomfortable, and it just becomes...
With the people you're playing with?
With the people that I'm playing with. Not necessarily with the people directly, but goes very silent very quickly, but also from other people, and it just becomes very awkward, and it's not a common sight.
Really? So it's... It's 2 minutes away.
Literally, it'd be anything from 2 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. We would always do it. And the funny thing is, you're always...
And you're probably thinking, when am I going to be doing this?
You're so conscious that you don't want to hold up play.
Yes.
You don't want the prayer to be seen as a way of causing inconvenience. So you'd almost give up a putt, or just, let's accelerate. Let's quickly move through this hole. Let's get to the next tee. We can go to the side. We can pray so we don't hold anyone up.
Right. Which kind of interferes with your game, though.
Yeah, it does. But it's just part and parcel, right? Yep. You just accept it. Because at the same time, you don't want to give it up, but the prayer is fundamental and you don't want to miss it.
Want to keep up the speed of play for your playing partners.
And you never want someone to turn around and say, oh, you know, he was then praying on the course and we then got slowed down, because it's like, well, I never ever want that to be a reason.
Okay.
And so when I took all of this and I looked at the game of golf, I thought, my God, this game is amazing, right? Mm. Even though we've got all this bit of negativity, I fell in love with the game. And then on my travels across the country, I started finding pockets of Muslim guys that would mention the word golf. So go to a wedding. As soon as anybody mentions golf, my ears prick up, right? I've got this six...
Hello?
I'm like, where? Okay. Golf, you... And then before you know, I'm like, what, you play? You don't look like a golfer, but I'm just like, I wouldn't expect it. And I'm like, wow. So I was fascinated to then see, I wonder how many Muslims play this game. And then I'd seen that there were small societies. Uh-huh. Okay, they'd been set up, and it's just a group of guys getting together and they play golf in different courses. I thought, again, I've always followed the mantra that if you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability, do it with excellence, and just smash it. Mm-hmm. So I thought, if I'm going to set up an organisation... Mm-hmm. Let's do it properly. So I thought, let's do a charity golf day. We can use it as an excuse to raise some money for a really good cause, but then I can also use it just to see how many Muslims there are that play this game. Where should we do it? Well, we chose the Grove.
Okay.
I thought, let me do the Grove because it's famous for Tiger Woods. They look after you. They're a stunning venue.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be really well catered for. And I gave myself 6 months to launch. So December 25th, 2019.
You like a challenge, don't you?
Yeah. I thought 6 months should be enough time to get at least 50, 60 guys. So launched on Christmas Day. I thought, everyone's at home that day, right?
Yeah.
Sent out a message through WhatsApp, created a website, and in 24 hours, I had 72 people pay and sign up for an event that was 6 months in advance. I was now on a course, and my phone was just pinging.
That's so brilliant.
And I was thinking, oh my God, what is going on?
There is a need.
This is ridiculous.
There's a want, a desire.
I had to create a waiting list.
Right.
So I had to get out of the course and just get onto the computer and do that. A week later, I had about 80 to 100 people on a waiting list saying, Amir, we want to play.
No way.
And I'm thinking, we're not supposed to play this game. What are you lot doing? Anyway, if we fast forward, COVID hit, we still managed to hold the event. We were one of the few where we could have events outside.
Yeah.
We did it. We raised about £18,000. But I had people from all across the country come together.
Amazing.
And it was based on three key principles and values. No alcohol, no gambling. And we made safe places for people to pray. And so there's a video out there where you've got people praying on the turning circle at the Grove. And they were so accommodating. And it was incredible.
I was going to ask, how did they
phenomenal.
Accommodate?
Phenomenal. Brilliant. And again, if you look at the requirements, it's really not much.
Yeah.
Right, we didn't even need any space outside. We just said, look, because as a Muslim, you can pray anywhere.
Okay.
Right, as long as it's clean. And by clean, it's just like, it could be muddy.
What does that mean?
So it could be muddy. Muddy's clean, right?
Okay.
But if there was, for example, dog poo, for example, then that wouldn't be seen to be clean. But if there's any patch of glass or concrete or anywhere you can pray where you're not an inconvenience to someone else and it's a flat surface, you're good to go. And all you do is you face Mecca. And that's really easy to find. And a trick is, if you ever see a satellite dish, all satellite dishes point to Mecca. It's incredible, right?
Why is that?
I don't know.
I've got no idea.
But if we were ever in a place
that's remarkable,
where you didn't have phones, then this would be four compasses and phones. Yeah. Well, you should just look for a satellite dish and think, right, Mecca's that way. Boom, done.
Oh, wow.
It's brilliant. so anyway, and so that
and
for
would
me,
you do a slightly longer one because you're a slightly longer prayer, or will it no, so 2 to 4 minutes?
Yeah, so funny enough, we pray 5 times a day. So yeah. The first one is just pre-dawn, right? So it happened just before sunrise. So now it's about 4:30 in the morning. That's literally a 3 to 5 minute prayer. The next one happens just before midday, according to the sun. So now it would be happening around about 1:15. Mm-hmm. And then the next one would be a late afternoon prayer. So that would be around 6 o'clock. And then the next one is at sunset, which is around 9 o'clock. And then it's about an hour and a half after sunset, you've got the final prayer that takes place in the evening.
Okay.
So you can see in the summer how the prayers get really longed out. So you could be praying from 4:30, it would be your first one, and your last one could be at 11 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
Whereas in the winter, it could be 6:30 in the morning, and you could be done by 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
Because they change.
And during a golf game, probably a couple of times?
Summer, maybe not even, because you could probably pray before you go out.
Yeah.
Or you could probably, in fact, because there's a 6-7 hour gap between the two prayers, between the afternoon and the late afternoon one, you can actually play around without praying. But if it does come in, you'd only be probably praying one, maximum two in the summer. But it's in the winter where they sort of come quite close together.
Right. And it went really well at the Grove. 18,000 you raised.
Yeah, about 18,000. Yeah,
that's
we worked
fantastic.
With a charity called Reed Foundation. So we raised money for children, orphans, to have education and school. So a school was going towards building a school in Pakistan. So that was brilliant. But I was
fantastic.
Really inspired and thought, wow, these people have come together. There's something here. And if we sort of fast forward on 3 years on, I've got over 400 Muslim guys with official handicaps who are regularly playing events across the country. We've just launched a series of events called the Race to Belek. So, and I've got 3 handicaps because, again, I looked at golf and I thought, why is it that it's always the lowest handicapper that's always lauded and celebrated? In fact, the guy or the girl who's at 24 handicap or whatever it may be enjoys the game, if not more, than the scratch player, yet they're always sort of, you know, ostracized or kept up. So I thought, I'm going to set a tournament. I want to have equal trophies, equal prizes, but we'll have handicap divisions because you got two. So we have 3, 0 to 9, 10 to 17 and 18 to 28, for example. And the winner of each division gets the same prize. So they get the same trophy. And last year, we gave an all expenses paid trip to each winner to Turkey for 7 days to go and play golf for 5 days.
It sounds brilliant.
5 rounds. So,
good.
So we went to Belek, and then we went in February. We took over 50 guys to Belek. And again, it was just a taster of, again, I'd been on golf holidays, and it ends up becoming really a boozy trip.
Yeah.
And again, for someone like me, like, I'm not comfortable in that environment.
Did you not feel comfortable even when not drinking, having a Coca-Cola?
No, because a lot of the times, and I'd been on the few golf trips, it was always centred around the alcohol, which I get completely, and that's cool. But for me,
it feels like in our society, a lot of events are, you know, around alcohol, which is quite difficult for people who don't drink.
Yeah, and I've seen that in the corporate world as well, because my day job is I'm in recruitment, so I've been to events, you go to client meet, and it's always alcohol.
Yeah.
Right?
And some of them are really long. It's a long day or a long evening
absolutely. And I get it. People want to, you know, let their hair down. They want to relax and so on and so forth. But it can become a little bit awkward and you're left to one side and you're just like, you know, it is what it is. Yeah.
Have you met people who have completely accepted the fact that you don't drink?
Yeah, listen, everyone is really accommodating, right? It's not that people really put you in the corner and never want to talk to you and stuff. Mm. They get it. But at the same time, you become quite conscious as well because you're just like, I'm the minority here. You don't want to ruin anyone else's time. So you sort of just drift off, or you just think, you know what, this isn't for me, and let them crack on. But again, going on a golf trip, you know, you're excited. You're going with a group of friends. You're in a new country. You're in new cultures. You want to sample new food. And the golf courses are just stunning, right? And
so what you've managed to achieve with these trips away is perfect for you.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to see, could we do it? And for me, Turkey is probably pound for pound the best golfing destination in the world. And even as a Muslim, because all the food's halal, right? Obviously, all the hotels are all inclusive. And we tend to stay at nice places. So you're going to get, you know, hotels
with
it. Yeah, if you're going to do it, like, if you're going to do it well. Right. So we're not going to hold back on that. But again, your strength in numbers. Right.
Yeah.
You've got people, like-minded people, and the people who come to mind are all high-ranking professionals. We've got CEOs, MDs, FDs, all the way down to lorry drivers, taxi drivers. Everyone comes along, right? And it's the golf that brings them together. But like I said, we had 50 guys. We had people from Saudi Arabia, Malaysia, Qatar, Doha, Dubai, just come and be a part of this. Because again, people used to go, but they'd only go away with 4 to 5 people. We took 50. Mm. I'm planning to take 150 next year.
We will be back with Amir Malik in just a second, but on Why Golf Opinion Matters, we speak to fascinating people every fortnight to find out why they love the sport so much. On our last episode, we took the show on the road to the Belfry for Ed Chamberlain's charity golf day. He told us why it meant so much to him.
Unbelievable support I get, honestly, Stu Pot. When they first suggested this idea of an Ed Chamberlain golf day. 10 years ago it would be now, and I said, that'd be daft. Who's going to play in an Ed Chamberlain golf day? And yet here we are 10 years later, and we've got a waiting list, and we've got people wanting to play, and the support I get from the likes of yourself and AP and all these guys playing today is amazing. I can't thank people enough.
We also caught up with some of the competitors, including Love Island star turned presenter and TV personality, Chris Hughes. What is your drink on the 19th hole?
Torn between two here.
Okay, let's break it down.
I've slouched into my seat, so this is taking some thought.
I'm going to sit back as well.
This is going to be a while. Can we edit this down?
I really like, I think there's a weird, I have a weird fascination. I think hot chocolate at golf courses are really nice.
Olympic hockey gold medalist Helen Richardson-Walsh was also there.
Golf was just one of those sports that I just kind of grew up playing. So I got three older brothers and we played everything. And golf was one of those ones. We would just go down to the par three and just have a bit of a hit. So it wasn't necessarily a regular thing. It was just one of the sports that I just enjoyed playing.
We also spoke to former champion jockey AP McCoy, rugby player turned golfer Matt Banahan, and sports broadcaster Rishi Prasad. Make sure you go and listen if you haven't already, and hit subscribe on your favourite podcast provider for a new episode, Why Golf Opinion Matters, every 2 weeks. Now back to our chat with Amir. Is this a full-time job for you?
Not yet.
possibly soon.
So, you know, we've now created almost a movement. And so the first part of the vision was always, okay, can we do something for guys? Because obviously that's, you know, I can relate to that. But the vision of the MGA was always much bigger than that. And to sort of sum it up, it's to introduce golf to every Muslim man, woman, child, abled and disabled. And it's a game that I feel goes hand in hand with the faith, with the values, its traditions, its etiquettes, and everything that it teaches and promotes. Sits so comfortably with Islam as a religion. Moving on, I guess, into the women's side, the one that I'm really more passionate about.
How's
as well.
How's that going?
Phenomenal. Started off as an idea has almost now just, I feel, become an obligation upon me to continue it, because we realised, well, I soon realised that actually women don't play golf. And if we looked at the white middle-class woman, you realise that actually even statistics showed that they were falling out of love of the game, because, you know, you realise that the environments weren't made for them. The game of golf, the industry of golf is seen through the eyes of a white man. And that's pretty universal. And the way that it's taught, the way that it's promoted, the way that its doors are open, the way it's been innovated, everything is done through the eyes of a man. And so when I came from an outsider, now looking at it from a Muslim individual's perspective, more importantly from a Muslim woman, I thought, how would you ever get these two to come together? But when I broke it down, I thought it's the perfect sport. First of all, it's non-contact. You can play with other women. You get at least 10,000 steps in. You're outdoors and one with nature. It's a game of skill, intelligence, and you can play with any ability and any generation. More importantly, you can wear whatever you feel comfortable in as long as you can swing a club. So I then took the most conservative Muslim woman, and this is a lady who would be wearing a full niqab. So the only thing you could see would be her eyes. So she'd be wearing the full face covering, the veil, the robe, the gloves. I thought, can she swing a golf club? And what got me to that point is I saw a woman on TikTok wearing a white wedding dress, smashing a driver down the range. It's probably one of the most uncomfortable dresses you're going to wear, right? Because it's so limiting. But she was amazing. And I thought, if you can do that in that, then surely this lady wearing the niqab can hit a golf club. And that was my theory.
I'm fascinated to know how that went.
So I'm not a golf pro, play badly, and I realise you've still got to learn this game, right? You've got to be taught it. So I was now looking for a coach or an organisation that
And she wanted to play golf?
Yeah. And I didn't have anyone in particular, but it was very much inspired by my wife. So my wife wears a hijab, a headscarf and a robe. She doesn't necessarily cover the face, but she wears a long, loose garment. And when we looked at different sports that she could play, we took swimming, for example. So she would only go swimming when it was a ladies-only session. But these things only happen once a week, really odd times. And if you missed that session for whatever reason, you've got to wait a following week.
So that's not
accessible. And when you take football, rugby, cricket, you've got to wear completely different attire because the game warrants that. Whereas golf, as I said, it's literally you can wear it if you can swing a club. So anyway, I was then introduced to a chap called Alistair Spink. Alistair Spink heads up an organization called Love.Golf. The philosophy of Love.Golf was to really challenge the status quo of how golf was taught. So your first lesson is actually on the golf course. Your first lesson isn't how to hold a golf club isn't the grip. It's actually based on the learning theory. And so when I heard about his philosophy, I thought, if we took that methodology to the Muslim community, I wonder if we could create some magic.
Right.
On top of that, I was also conscious of the fact, and again, I'm basing everything around the most conservative and ultra-Orthodox Muslim. So we probably need a female coach, right, for her to feel really comfortable. And then I started realizing that actually only 7% of coaches in the PGA are female. And so you can start seeing how it's a really male-dominated world. And I'm thinking, wow. Anyway, I was very fortunate enough to be introduced to about 14 female coaches in the UK. So Alison and I, we had a really good discussion. We just hit it off. Our stories connected. And I thought, amazing. Let's test it out. So we found a coach in Hannah Crump, who was England Golf Coach of the Year last year. We found a venue in Stonebridge, just outside of Birmingham. And we said, let's do it.
Yeah.
So I launched through WhatsApp, 12 hours, I had 40 women sign up.
Excellent.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is blown crazy.
Right? Yeah.
And then we did the session. 2 hours later, these women are laughing. They're just buoyant. And they're just telling me words like, oh my God, Amir, this is life changing. We didn't think this game was for us. I didn't realize how hard it was, but so much fun. And you've got to realize we're just coming out of COVID and it almost given people an extra purpose to be outdoors and meet new people and make new friends. And I thought they've played golf for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. I thought maybe we got lucky. So we did it a further 2 times.
Okay.
Same results. And I thought, this is crazy.
You're onto something.
And I thought, okay. So I saw Alistair and I, and Love Duck Golf are backed by Syngenta. And Syngenta very much, so they look after the agriculture side of golf courses. So they provide all the chemicals and stuff. So they have a big research and development arm and they support Love Duck Golf. And so we all sat down and we said, look, we've got an opportunity, I think, that we could take this far and wide. And we anticipated we could probably introduce 200 to 300 women. The summer just gone last year, in the space of about 3 to 3.5 months, we had 1,200 Muslim women sign up and say they want to play golf.
Oh,
that was from London to Glasgow.
I think we
delivered sessions to about 560 women. We did about 30 sessions in 8 cities. Every weekend I was in a different city. We were meeting new women, new people.
And the stories were the same. We love it, being outdoors, meeting like-minded women, fresh air, exercise.
Not everyone's going to become, you know, or carry it on further, but that wasn't the point. The point was is that we were opening a world to people who didn't think it was accessible. And what was fascinating, I guess, was the women that we had coming were high-ranking professional women. These women are breaking glass ceilings in their respective professions. But yet when it came to golf, it was that same sort of concern of, will I be accepted? How will I be perceived? Is this even a place for me? Because golf is almost the holy grail of middle-class Britain, right? It's like we don't belong there. And so we would have to manage everything from the moment they arrived in the car park to the experience to the moment that they leave. Everything was so carefully planned. So nothing would dilute that experience. But then once you got them out on that course, we're turning heads. Because again, the imagery has now changed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I finally got the women that would wear full niqab out on a golf course. And people would turn up and look and think, what's going on here?
And how was swinging in the club?
You can ask them. I've got videos. They loved it.
Yeah.
They'd hit it just as far, if not further,
brilliant,
than someone who isn't wearing it, which is why my challenge to the industry is, who cares what you look like, what you wear? It's all about feeling comfortable.
Totally. And the more and more people I speak to through this podcast and through the work that we do here, we're all trying to change the face of golf in some way by making it accessible to everybody. And we want to see diversity on the golf course, on and off the golf course and around golf clubs. It's brilliant what you're doing and it needs to be done.
Yeah.
And why do you think golf in particular made those women feel like that?
There's probably a number of factors. First, they were made to feel safe, welcomed and comfortable. I mean, I'll give an example. And again, this is why there's a lot of work.
Which is a great message to golf clubs out there.
Absolutely.
To anyone involved in the sport. It's about making people feel welcome and part of something.
Without a doubt, you know, I think anyone who plays the game of golf is a custodian, because you're going to die one day. But you've got to be able to leave the game.
Really? I didn't know. Oh, God.
Well, if you speak to a few people, you might be surprised, actually. They're there
really,
for the rest.
That's a different podcast.
It's a different podcast, that one. But you know, you want to leave the game in a better place that you found it for the generation that are coming behind you, because this will outlive you, outlast you. And you have an opportunity, even at club level, to make an impact on people. But I think too many people get very fixated on, this is mine and my only, and don't want to share it with the world. And yet it's probably one of the most beautiful things and sports that I think someone could experience. It can genuinely bring people from all backgrounds together, right? And it doesn't even matter on your ability, because you can all play the same course and you can play the same game. You can't do that with many other sports, right?
No, it's amazing.
So I think the fact that we worked with clubs that were forward thinking, that were open, that were welcoming and wanted change, wanted and wanted to embrace it, because not every golf club did. It took me 6 months to find a golf course in the east of London where I had 600 women waiting to play golf. And it took 6 months to a club to respond or want to show some sort of interest or not get some sort of politics involved without having to go to committee members or whatever. And it's like, this is ridiculous. And we've not even talked about the financial benefits, the monetary benefits that can be gained by opening up a whole new community that have a high level of disposable income, that not only will come and use your golfer's course to play golf, but would probably use your function space, right? Your meeting space, would come and dine there, right?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Really important message to all golf clubs out there. And if you found you've discovered forward-thinking golf clubs. You mentioned Walton Heath as
well. Yeah, and that's probably one of my favourite ones, because if you look at Walton Heath, kings, prime ministers, royalty, right, the who's who have been members or participants with it. And Walton Heath is just one of those golf... You can't even see Walton Heath off the when you're driving down the A road, right? You don't even know it's there. It's that sort of almost secluded. So it comes with that aura. It's hosting the AIG Women's Open and stuff, right? And so to then find that we had a female coach who was part of the Love.Golf program, Jo Taylor there, says, I've spoken to our club, our management. We want to host the MGA Women. And I'm like, because I was looking for a venue in Surrey. I was like, are you sure? She was like, absolutely. And I was like, wow. And from the first moment of interaction with Jo, with the management, it was a dream. It was like, okay, this is really happening? Whatever you wanted, it was laid on. And then the discussion came around food, right? Because you can't have no session without food. And then we said, well, look, we'd like, ideally, the perfect menu wouldn't just be vegetarian. Of course, you've got to have that, but we'd love to have halal food. And I've seen the menu at Walton Heath and it's stunning. And they said, absolutely. And in fact, instead of getting external caterers, because I used to get external caterers for other venues, they said, we'd like to do it.
Brilliant.
And I was like, okay. They said, well, can we just have a quick meeting? Can you explain what halal food was? It was probably a 3-minute meeting, because that's all it took to explain halal food. The head chef said, done. And I said, are you sure? He goes, look, leave it to me. We'll sort the menu out.
Yeah.
And it was probably the most delicious, diverse.
Oh, everyone at Walton Heath, well done.
Absolutely. And the women were just like incredible. They were like, oh my God. And the members were just so pleased to see people from their community come to a golf club and just be. A golf club is a reflection of its community, right? It doesn't need to be much more than that. It's got to be the heartbeat of its community. It's got to reflect its community. And if you are a golf club, I would ask you to go and look at the data around 10, 15 kilometres of around you and see who is your community. Mm-hmm. What is it made up of? Men, women, children, people who are disabled, whatever it may be. What's the ethnicities? What's the religion around it? And then have a look at the demographics of your membership and say, does that reflect my community? And if it doesn't, then at least you've got a good problem. Because actually, if your golf club is relatively busy, it could be busier, right? And how can it be more reaching?
Because there's such great spaces, aren't they?
Oh, it's
so
phenomenal.
So much can be done.
It's so much. And golf clubs aren't just necessarily a place to have golf events. They can be used for so many other community events. It could be a multi-purpose space, and there's so much more revenue to be had. So if you're a golf manager listening to this, you'd be crazy by not tapping into this, because there's a lot of money that can be bought in other than golf. You can be seen to be diverse. You'll be able to increase your workforce. Greenkeepers, for example, there's a big problem in greenkeepers. There's people falling out of love of golf in the industry. Well, have we looked outside of golf? Then you'll have diversity of thought. You'll start thinking and doing things differently. So my message to golf club is just reflect your community. And it may be that, you know, you don't have many minority people living in a community, that's fine. But what else are you doing about the disabled community, for example? Or what are you doing about people from different types of backgrounds? Be a true reflection and representation, and I think then you've become successful.
Absolutely. And what's next for you? World domination. Global domination.
Well, look, as I said, the vision is to introduce it to every Muslim man, woman and child, abled and disabled. There's 1.9 billion Muslims in the world. One in every fourth person on a global basis is Muslim or identifies as Muslim. So the opportunity genuinely is huge. It's not a game that's gone to that part of the world, or if it has, it's very colonial. It's very sort of made for the upper class, for the absolute aristocracy and elite.
Which we're trying to change all the time.
Right? So I would love to take the model, because this year we're taking golf into faith schools and kids with disabilities. And so if I can get the model right, I almost want to lift and shift this into different countries. I'd love to go to Malaysia. We've got the Far East. We've got America. The world genuinely is an open playground.
It's your oyster. There's so much opportunity.
Why not? And it's not about me. This is what I'd be looking for. There'll be far more passionate people out there that could do so much much more. And if we can just go and work with those types of people to help us land and expand, because this is now much more bigger than what I ever had. This, like I said, it's almost become an obligation. We just want to spread the game far and wide in every shape or form.
Right, Samir, now it's time for our quickfire quiz.
Sure.
It's called Clubhouse Curveballs. Yeah. And yeah, five quickfire questions. The first one is, which golf course is top of your bucket list to play?
Oh, that's a really hard question.
Probably quite a few.
Yeah, I think probably Pebble Beach. Played it so many times on a simulator.
Oh,
I think I can score well. No, the one I'm going to build, hopefully.
Okay.
But I think, Pebble, and of course, Augusta.
Yes.
I think if I could only ever play one golf course, then that would probably be the one. I think those two.
Loads of my friends have played in the media day on the Monday
really?
After, so I'm like, oh, have a good time.
Yeah, have a good,
round, not just at all.
Absolutely, I think Augusta would be amazing.
Okay, Augusta and Pebble Beach. What's the favourite club in the bag for you?
It's probably, so it depends on what time of year, but at the moment it's probably my 3-wood.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
off the tee on the fairway?
Both. That's my go-to club. If the driver isn't behaving, that is my go-to club.
Okay.
It gets me out of a little trouble.
Good choice. Which hazard do you hit your ball into most, bunkers or the water?
Water. Yeah, I don't mind
obviously
bunkers.
If there's water on the course.
Yeah, if there's water in the course. Yeah, there's just, I hate water.
Lost a lot of balls?
A load, too many.
Oh, no. I was playing the Belfry, the Brabazon course, and I think I went in every bunker.
Yeah.
It felt like it anyway. It was exhausting. You know, when you like one of those
rounds
of golf, you're just really tired.
Yeah.
Like, no, please.
But at least you walk back with the same ball with the water.
That's true, yes.
I think I lost
a couple in the water as well on 80.
Yeah.
What would your dream four ball be?
Really good question. Mm. So Tiger would have to be in there.
Yeah, I think he's been in every
probably just because of unbelievable.
Yes.
I think Seve, because I would just love to talk to him and see how he would his interpretation of the game and watch him, and maybe Phil Mickelson, because I think anyone who's left-handed in any sport is just look so graceful, and I think it'd be amazing to watch him. So I think those three would be good, and then the fourth one, if I was to have one, I've heard a lot about Lee Trevino. I've heard he's a bit of a character.
Yeah.
So I think
one of the greatest characters in golf.
Yeah.
Sorry, how many have you got then? You've got Lee.
I've got five.
You've got five.
You've got to be in the four.
One of them can caddy.
I'd probably go with Seve, Phil, and Tiger.
Three great players. Okay. And finally, what's your drink of choice on the 19th hole?
If I've had a good round, probably a mango lassi. Probably what that
mango
would be.
Mango lassi?
Yeah.
What's in it?
So,
well, mango.
Yeah, it's milk with fresh mango mixed into it and probably a little bit of sugar. So,
lovely.
On a hot day, there's nothing better.
Oh, that's, I
so
think that should go
some.
To the top of the list. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Thank you, Amir.
My pleasure.
Finish off by asking you, basically, why golf?
Golf has changed my life. It's made me look at the world in a very different way. It's opened up so many opportunities I never thought was possible. It's the ultimate pursuit of perfection, which is why I think I'll be playing it for the rest of my life. And like I said, it's a sport that really can bring people from different backgrounds, communities, genders, races together. You can't say that about many things in life, but you can about golf.
Fantastic answer. Now, if people want to find out more about the Muslim Golf Association, where should they go to?
Just head us up online, muslimgolfassociation.com. We've got an Instagram page. It's not the greatest, but we're trying to improve that.
Great.
But please have a look at some websites. You can just even Google Muslim Golf, see some articles that are out there, and just continue to support us. But more importantly, hopefully, if it's inspired anyone to start something in their own community in any shape or form, just go out and do it. More than anything, is what I would say. But if you can support us, please have a look on the website.
Oh, excellent. And I've learned so much. And
thank
I'm
you.
So pleased with what you're doing.
Thank
it
you.
Really is amazing. And also, I've noted down mango lassi to try. So
absolutely.
I will
and thank
try
you for
one.
Inviting
thank
me.
Thank you, Amir. It's been great.
No, thank you for having us.
Remember, if you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider and the next episode will drop into your feed automatically. We're also on Instagram. Just search for This Is Why Golf. To find more of the most up-to-date insights and research, just head to thisiswhygolf.com, where there's lots more information on all the benefits that golf has to offer. But until next time, from Di Stewart, it's goodbye.